Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode, we are speaking with Craig Serra, head of Commercial Solutions and Partnerships, Clinical Research Business Unit at Flatiron Health.
And Craig has over 20 years of experience within global clinical development operations, spanning strategy, innovation, digital, functional, and business leadership roles. And he's previously held leadership roles at Novartis, Pfizer, Eisai, and Roche. And Craig was also a guest on our executive roundtable on real-world data in clinical trials, which can be found in our May issue. So thank you for joining us again, Craig. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Craig. Could you describe your career journey and then what ultimately got you interested in the data side of clinical trials?
Craig, the formative years. I'd like to reference this because it really was kind of a starting point for me. It was grew up in a pharmacy. Basically, as soon as I could like legally get a job in New Jersey when I turned 14, like as I'm blowing out the candles, I'm filling out a W-9, where I started working in a pharmacy and it was doing basic things and cashier stuff. And the need came up to actually move back into the pharmacy and do the same stuff there. And then all of a sudden that was bought by a larger pharmacy. And so they were integrating systems. And so now you had like delivery for customers, but also some like bunch of people going, how do we use this tech stuff? And I'm sitting here as at that time, 15-year-old going, hey, I think I know a little bit about this computer thing, this internet thing. And before you knew it, I was just so steeped in learning about medication, learning about the healthcare side of our world and learning about customer service with patients. I mean, nothing teaches you more about customer service than a mom with her 8-year-old coming in 5 minutes to close that needs a pink amoxicillin script filled. And those that are my age remember the pink amoxicillin. But you spend enough time doing that and you realize that you want to go along a certain path. And so after quite a fun undergrad, I found my way in clinical research, like many others, by accident, saying, oh, wait, there's a whole world of non-lab science happening, and it's in the form of clinical research. And it's sort of, that was the eye-opening moment, making it into the graduation, shearing plow and working in kind of clinical information and clinical documentation. Very quick move to Pfizer, where I had an unbelievable leader that gave the group some great chances at succeeding. And before you knew it, it's 20 years gone by. And I've made stops mostly in large pharma. I had a hand in helping run and operationalize a small CRO 10 or 11 years ago. Tremendous people to work with, tremendous opportunities that I've been given. Hopefully most have been earned. But I've had tremendous leaders along that journey. And so I want to make sure to call that out. And it's just been through a mindset of knowing what we do matters, and it matters a hell of a lot. And just trying to show up every day, doing the best that we possibly can, whether it's on the buy side, the sell side, doesn't matter. There's an enormous kind of mosaic and fabric of delivery mechanisms for clinical research. With the data side, it's actually kind of funny. I'm as reliant on data as, oh, let me check the air quality now in New Jersey. And like, do I go outside or no? Like, this isn't some advanced analytics kind of world. This is just, I just happen to gravitate more towards combining process and people and tech and numbers. And I just kind of like to get my tentacles in all different areas. And I sort of got mostly typecast in the data world. But over time, I learned that using those same skills and hopefully encouraging and coaching and leading for others, that we could take those skills in the data world and serve others internally, right? We could serve a monitoring group, a trial management group, obviously, statistical groups as a customer, but then you can look outwardly, how can we use that same data and actually help sites or help patients and help regulators, like just help that whole external world. And so I never found myself very siloed in the data world. I always found that it was almost like a launching pad for being able to help and support where I can. So yeah, that it's been quite a journey, and I know these are silver highlights, not gray hair, but it's been a hell of a ride, that's for sure.
That's awesome. You just said about the data silos. Just explain why you use that terminology. Is it because you feel that pharma can be siloed, or data bridges silos, or that nothing related to anything that I just said?
There's certainly silos in every industry. There's silos in huge functional verticals in every industry. We typically see very large silos when it's, you know, research, development, commercial, and then the silos get smaller and smaller as we get into each of the verticals within those groups. But certainly, is there line of sight from a monitoring group as to how an edit check specification is developed, or vice versa? Is there respect and proper knowledge given to how difficult a study initiation visit is, or site selection that's not just throwing a dart at an Excel dartboard? I think silos like that exist in terms of just understanding different functions. But certainly, to your second point, a bridge can be built from a data group where they can say, look, you know what? I'm not getting much out of this thing, but if we implement this thing, it's better for the study. It's better for the broad group. It's better for the company. And so I've been oriented towards, and I've worked with a lot of people with the same mindset, towards let's use our powers for good, even if we don't realize the good in and of itself in our group. Certainly you can't do that flat out, because then you're just sort of constantly in deference to everyone else. But I think that there should be, and there are, examples where someone could say, yeah, some of the work is on me, but this other group over here, it's of tremendous value. And now they value me so much more, and the relationship just ratchets up to us, you know, so much of a better state than it was prior. And I've seen that over and over. And so I kind of stick to that script with the way I approach any kind of silo situation.
Excellent. Thank you. So you just said, you know, before that you worked for CROs and large pharma, and now you're working for Flatiron Health. So how are these companies, either whether the specific industry or just whichever, just how are the company cultures different or maybe similar?
Certainly large pharma and large CRO world often look very similar. I think there's a heightened pace and there's a heightened sense of urgency, or maybe it's just simply the buy-sell dynamic in a CRO versus a large pharma company. I do think there's risk profiles of people that work there that they're very often drawn to those companies because they have an aspect of risk aversion. And that's not all untrue for me. There's a certain risk aversion that comes with joining a large company, but there's also a ability to make change from within and to try and spread a certain way of being and, you know, kind of into the DNA of the company. When I think about a software company, having never worked for a software company before, I have been, and this is not simply corporate speak, but I've been just blown away with the way Flatiron actually approaches culture, approaches decision-making, speed of delivery. The quality of delivery is exceptional and just blows me away. And so I know a lot of software companies are not like that, from just anecdotally talking to other people that will be complaining about their where they work as a software company. So I think what Flatiron actually has is a combination of incredibly deep medical expertise in oncology, incredibly deep expertise in site side and healthcare delivery side reality and what that actually looks like. Certainly the historical Flatiron has been known for absurdly high quality data. And now moving into, as a separate business unit, into the clinical research world, and want to take those same attributes and kind of apply them there. And so when I look at what's similar, what's different, I think I probably hit on enough differences. The similarities, and I go to my grave feeling and thinking this, is that to a person, I have seen just tremendous people in our industry, and that's across the board. They're just trying to get contentment out of their job. They're trying to raise a family, whatever it might be. They're trying to live their life. And, you know, I see very, very high quality people completely across the board in all these different types of companies. So that's definitely been the thing that stood out the most to me.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Craig. Where do you see clinical trial data in the next few years? And then maybe we touched on the second part of this question when you were talking about the silos with Lisa earlier, but what do you think are the three largest challenges to achieving specific data-oriented goals?
Yeah. And where do I see clinical data in the next few years? Flowing through clinical pipe, our EHR to EDC connector. No, where do I see data in the next few years? So we're all sort of in agreement that overall data volume is growing. I'm not sure if it's with the exponential or infinite rate of our universe, but it's growing, right? There's more and more data, which by default means we probably are at risk for being less and less efficient with those data, simply as the denominator goes, gets higher. I do see on your most basic of studies that data sources, as we all, again, would agree, are just more and more individual sources of data. And it becomes much more about bringing all that stuff into one place. It becomes much more about what's the burden on both internal groups, as well as who's actually providing those data. And that immediately gets to the, when we start talking about burden, we start bringing in, aspects of, is it of high enough quality? And so where I see clinical data in the next few years is needing to be of higher quality for much better evidence generation. And we heard this from Dr. Cowell a few days ago, but much better evidence generation for a host of different reasons. And I see it being more and more through the lens of where are we actually creating the data? Where's the actual point of creation? And if you're a patient at a site, it's happening right there. And going towards that space and saying, well, how can we solve for where it starts and knowing that we can get it to the right place, at the last stop in the data train, basically. And just focusing on that data origination and making sure that the quality of it just stays top-notch through that whole process. And there's a number of different, obviously, data sources and places we need to look. But for us, top of that list is from sites, namely community sites that are doing research. So there's certainly no shortage of data-related jobs. There's certainly no shortage of data-related activity. And so I think, to kind of summarize, the three challenges are huge volume. It's coming in from a whole bunch of different sources. And we basically need to maintain the quality of that because the scientific low-hanging fruit is gone. We're going after more and more difficult small molecules, large molecules, biologics, and therefore data inherently have to be of better quality to support those scientific endeavors.
Those are all great points. As you mentioned, needing those people and those skills, what should clinical operations professionals be doing? Because data touches everything, but they may not be data people. Like, what do that look like?
It's a great question. I think one big thing, and this is going to seem counterintuitive because it's not them being upskilled or something like that, but it's having trust in their counterpart colleagues in data operations functions or holding them accountable. It doesn't necessarily mean that someone in ClinOps all of a sudden has to be someone that you would confuse for in data ops or in data science, but the trust factor, the ability to say, I know what I know and I'm excellent at what I do, but they're great at what they do. And so therefore I'm going to extend trust to them that they're basically saying, if a monitoring visit shouldn't happen and the data, and they're telling me the data is saying that, I'm going to trust in them. And I'm going to pull through that insight into, in this case, a non-action. Or if we do need to increase certain monitoring visits or a certain way of doing something, then we're going to listen to those data in the same way you would listen to the air quality report and, think about not going outside, or you see that's 90% chance of rain and bring an umbrella. Right? We're not talking, as the old saying goes, rocket surgery. We're just saying that data should be driving the discussion. It does not have to be some absurdly algorithmic kind of output. And I think that's where clinical operations can lean in from a knowledge perspective, is even just getting sort of a foundational understanding of either database design or where data are, how they're created, what sort of the underlying foundational aspects of a clinical trial R is a tremendous help to the data colleagues, but I still default to a trust in expertise or a deferral to expertise and essentially just letting that lead the way.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks, Craig. Is there anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. It's always a pleasure to speak about how our industry has changed in so many respects and it's stayed the same in others as I go and fax something to my doctor's office. While simultaneously taking a ride to the doctor's office in a car that drives itself. I don't, just go figure. Neither of those are true, by the way. That was just anecdotal. but that was just creative license or whatever the appropriate saying is. But no, I think one of the biggest things that we can do, whether it's data, clin-ops, whatever it might be, is as some of us get on in years and see that there's a whole new sort of cadre of people that are interested in this space, I think the best thing that we can do is make sure that the next generation, I can't believe I'm talking about the next generation of people working in clinical research have our support from anyone that's been in the industry a considerable amount of time to be able to help them, to either introduce them to people, educate, listen to what their needs are, refer them for a role, take a risk on hiring someone that might be not the greatest fit, but they have huge potential. Because I've seen over and over again that there's really good stories that come out of that. So I think that would be the last thing that I would want to mention is be kind, be human, and pay it forward.
It was excellent speaking with you. Thank you so much, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Lisa. And thank you, Andrew.
Yep. Thank you, Craig.